one of our own on WNR.
The sound of Waterford.
In this sixth program from the second series of One of Our Own, Agnes Aylward is interviewed by Catherine Foley about her life as a public servant and her role in Tramore's Lefcadio O'Hearn Gardens. Roseanne Foley recorded and edited the series, which is produced by An Corsacock.
This was made with funding from Commissioner na Man and the television licence fee.
Agnes Aylward, a Waterford woman and a former top-ranking public servant, is founder and chairwoman of the Lefcadio O'Hearn Japanese Gardens. She told me first about growing up in the countryside on the outskirts of Tramore.
I'm a Waterford woman. I was born 3 miles outside Tramore town near Gairra Strand. You might know it, beautiful, beautiful beach. Very popular now, but when I was a child, it was really unfrequented. So we used to run down to the strand and swim and have a great time there. So my father had a farm near it, so that's where I'm from.
It's clear Agnes's parents influenced her hugely as a young child.
Edmund Phelan and Mary Robinson, who became Mary Phelan, they were my parents. My mother obviously was a fantastic woman, but she was so busy with all the children. With babies and babies and babies, and she...
Did you have a big family?
7 in the second family. I mean, she had 2 in her first family, and she was widowed very early on. There was a gap between the two families, but my mother never expected 7 children in her second marriage, which she started at 30, so she was quite a busy woman. My father had to leave school early himself. He had an accident on the farm, his leg was hurt, and his older brother died, and he was the farmer. So he left school probably when he was 14, but that didn't impede him from being a fantastic teacher. And I was reading before I went to school, and I don't know what method of teaching he had, but I was reading a cartoon on the Irish press, Count Curly Wee and Gussie Goose. That was a sort of a rhyming cartoon, and there were little pictures with it. And I was reading that, and I was doing all my sums. So when I went to school, it had no fear because I'd got that great head start.
Oh, that's such a lovely memory to have of your father teaching you.
I'm very grateful to my father for giving me such a head start. And it's really huge luck to have that in life.
Agnes recalls starting out as a little girl in primary school.
I didn't start school until I was almost 6. 5 3/4, I think. And the reason was my parents kept me at home until my next in 9, Deirdre, my sister, was almost 4, and the two of us were sent together because we were a good distance from the school, so we were brought by pony and trap. It was pre-motor car. And so that was a bit of organising. So the two of us were sent together.
And where were you going to school,
Agnes? In Tramore, in the Sisters of Charity school in Tramore. We had a small school, a small class at that stage, and I have a very strong memory of one teacher, Sister Pascal, and she was at Redmond, and there was a brother Redmond in the Christian Brothers, and I wonder where they related in some way to John Redmond, but I didn't know him, she was such a staunch patriotic person. She was a very proud woman, and I can still see her standing in front of the class, giving us all this huge sense of pride in being Irish. And we'd be told all about the Fianna and the great feats of Finn McCool and Cuchulainn, and it made you so proud.
So where did you go on to secondary school then?
Star of the Sea in Tramore. I did my intercert there. And then for the last 3 years, I went to boarding school in Dublin to a Dominican college. So I did my leaving cert there.
Was that difficult being away from home? And
It was. Of us went together again, Deirdre and myself. It was very difficult for her because she was only 13 and too young, really. And I was 15, so it wasn't so difficult for me. I didn't really like it very much, but it was a good experience of being independent and being in a bigger group and getting out of a small town. And there was no... I wouldn't think the education levels were as good because the classes were bigger than they were in Tramore, but there was something else to be learned there.
Once Agnes had finished her second level education, she got a job and became a member of the workforce.
23 when I started at university, so I had a good lot of work experience, which was terrific.
Where did you work?
My first job was in Powers Seeds, Waterford, and they were starting up a landscape gardening division. And I went for an interview to an ad that was on the paper, and I had an interview, and they saw on my little CV, which was a very small CV at the time, that I had, from my Leaving Cert, a scholarship to the College of Art. So they said, oh, we're starting up landscape gardening and you're going to draw the plans. So I got a job, and I worked with a man from Tremor, Mike Harney, who had been in America and had learned about designing gardens, but it was great fun. I spent 3 years in Powers, went to Geneva for 6 months when I was in my 20s to get some experience abroad, and came back, worked at another landscape gardening company. And then I decided I should get a little more formal education, so went to UCC and did sociology there and economics, which was a good degree.
A mature student, Agnes continued to work, even while she was at University College Cork.
I was working full-time and studying full-time, so I didn't have time to really enjoy campus life as a 17 or 18 year old would. I got a job in the Tivoli restaurant in Patrick Street in Cork. It's now gone, but it was, there was a cake shop on the first floor, and then there was a proper restaurant as well, with, you know, very high quality evening meals and so on. And I got a job there firstly as a bookkeeper doing the office work, and I used to hop out the door onto the number 5 bus in Patrick Street up to the college, get my lecture and back. And that was first year. The degree was a social science. I think I hit it at a very good time when I was 23. If you start studying these things when you're 17, you haven't really seen anything in the world. So it was more meaningful. And the economics, I enjoyed particularly economic history, because it was very interesting to see how some economies developed and others didn't, and why and what stemmed the evolution and the Industrial Revolution. And I did my mini thesis on the difference in the growth of the economies north and south and all that. It was quite interesting, and that led me into the whole area of social development and economic development. I was very interested in that field, and that took me on then when I finished in UCC to the ESRI, with Economic and Social Research Institute.
Agnes recalls how she brought insights she gained in the world of work and business to her studies.
I was observing commerce, and I was observing normal commerce. And I remember one lecture we had had diagrams on the board in the college showing the formula for microeconomic theory. And it was so complex, and it was so outside the way the theory of the firm, how businesses behaved. And I was watching it, and I had worked in many small businesses. And I said to him, this is not the way, no small business ever thinks like this. And I remember he said to me, you have to remember that economics is in a laboratory land. And I always remember that. He was finding a formula to match, you know, theories, whereas I had, as you said, worked in small companies and, I suppose, learned the practical side of things.
Following completion of her postgraduate studies at university, Agnes began work as a research assistant at the ESRI.
I worked with an established professor, so it was an American man, and the field was, it was more psychology than sociology, so it wasn't really my favourite area. But I did learn, and there were always lots of interesting conversations with other economists there, and lectures regularly there, and so on. And I also, while I was working there, I registered for a master's degree in UCD, and I did a master's there in economic in economics, but the economics of education really was what it was about, and using capital investment properly in education. And the person leading that course was a very well-known man at the time, Paddy Lynch, Professor Patrick Lynch, who had been one of the champions of free education, free secondary education in Ireland, and a very visionary man. And he was a terrific person to meet, because it was another visionary person who would influence you in how you thought. So he was quite an influence in my life. And I did my master's there. And I did, while I was in the ESRI, I was able to use some of my research there to feed into it. And it was looking at economic disadvantage by different small areas, small electoral divisions in Dublin, and looking at relating various indices to educational achievement, size of household, single parent families, level of education, whatever, a whole lot. There were 6 or 7 or 8 things, all measurable from census data, and to try and draw a map of deprivation and so on. And really those maps are very much, they're used nowadays in a different way also, in a more sophisticated way. So that was my master's then. So, and then I left from there to go to the civil service.
Yes, what prompted you? Did you feel that you'd have more impact, or that it would be more relevant to what you were studying, that you left the ESRI?
I suppose I might have wanted at that stage to really get stuck into something and get working and doing something rather than studying.
So where in the civil service, Agnes,
I was assigned to the Department of Finance initially. And I was assigned to a division dealing with agriculture and fisheries. And I remember my first job almost was, I was given a file about a proposal to build a harbour somewhere in Donegal. And I was basically to knock the stuffing out of it. And that wasn't my orientation. I find the reasons why not. And I didn't really enjoy that kind of work. And I looked around and I found there was another division there, Science and Technology, which was very progressive and which was looking at how Ireland should invest more in science and technology and innovation and R&D in order to develop our own homegrown industry and not rely so much on foreign direct investment. And that really attracted me, going back to my economic development degree. And so I asked to move there, and I got a move, and I worked there then for several years, and that was terrific.
As Agnes described her work and the research she was engaged in, I wondered if she had ever taken any time out to have fun. It's all, you're very academic and studious. As a young woman, were you having fun as well? Were you going out on the town?
I was, I'm skipping all
was
that.
Was it all work and study?
No, it wasn't all work, not at all. Not at all, but I suppose I had fun like everybody else. I danced in the Atlantic Ballroom in Tremore. I heard Brendan Boyer singing. I heard all the show bands.
So you were up and down to home as well. You were very much coming up and down to Waterford all the time, weren't you?
Yes. Well, I suppose, when I'm thinking of Brendan Boyer, it was probably while I was in Waterford. Yes, I was coming up and down, yeah.
Agnes has had many roles throughout her career. She has worked in the ESRI, in the Department of Industry, Trade and Tourism. She was Director of Strategic Development in TOGISC. Later, she chaired committees in the EU, the UN, the OECD and the European Space Agency.
While I was in the science and technology field there, I worked first with a man called Michael Manahan, who has Waterford connections. He was a brother of Anna Manahan, the actress. He was in the civil service, and he was my principal officer at the time. And I used to go to Brussels, go to meetings there, was part of the Irish delegation. Then I became the Irish delegate to various committees. That was exciting and interesting. And another sort of eye-opener, because suddenly we were there at the table with our flag, Ireland, equal to every other country around the table. And that was something for somebody who grew up in an Ireland that was still an island behind an island and hadn't really found its place fully in the world. So here we had So I went to Brussels and I took part in meetings, and they were generally the sort of things you do at these negotiations and trying to get good deals.
Jet-setting.
No. Like it was, well, I had to go by plane, of course, but it wasn't. It was hard work, but very enjoyable work. It's a huge privilege to be able to represent your country. Everybody loves to wear the green jersey.
On a more romantic note, Agnes recalls the day she met her husband, Sean Aylward. It seems they were both busy at work when their paths crossed.
I met my husband, Sean, and he was...
Sean Aylward. And is he a Waterford man?
No, but he has connections, close connections, Carrick-on-Shore. Yeah. That almost qualifies. His father was from Carrick-on-Shore. Yeah. But he moved to Dublin.
And where did you meet him?
I met him in the Department of the Taoiseach. I was working there, and he was at the time, he was private secretary to the Taoiseach, Charlie Haughey. And he had formerly been private secretary in Jack Lynch's office earlier on. And he started that work at a very early age. He was, you know, he got a good start in the civil service. I met Sean there, and we worked together in the science and technology area after a government shuffle when people moved around and Gareth Fitzgerald came into office and he changed all the staff and people generally moved around to different areas. And Sean and I ended up in the same area, and that was the beginning of a 40-year-old marriage.
Lovely. Mm. So was that a big day? Outside Tremor?
We kept it very small. We had our wedding in Dublin, and we didn't want a huge deal. It was families really, and a few close friends. Yeah. And we were actually very busy, both of us, at the time. So we were kind of fitting it in between. Ireland had the presidency of the EU that year, which meant we were involved in over and back to Brussels. And I was chairing a group in Brussels at the time, preparing for a council of ministers, and. So that was all happening. But we got into some nice trips. We went to Inishman, and he proposed to me on Inishman. So that happened in the Gaeltacht area, if you like.
The hauling her father.
Agnes recalls her interest in the story of Newfoundland when she was in the department of the Taoiseach.
There was an opportunity arising through the department of the Taoiseach, Ireland-Newfoundland Partnership. And what had happened was John Bruton, actually, God rest him, he had been to Newfoundland and he had found the amazing similarity with Irish people there. And he had got on extremely well with the Premier in Newfoundland, and they had decided we must do something about this. He came back. The government changed soon after and he hadn't really done anything. But the story is that he had said to Bertie Ahern, don't let this go, make something happen here. So they were looking for somebody to just make some formal links. And I was asked, would I do it? And I said I would. And when I did, I didn't know then the huge links between Waterford and this part of Ireland and Newfoundland. And I don't think anybody in government really knew either. They just knew there was a big Irish connection. And when I got there...
Oh, so you travelled to Newfoundland.
I went there, Newfoundland. That's how they tell you over there, Newfoundland, understand, so you're to Newfoundland. They shortened the fund. Okay. Anyway, that's the sign that you actually are in when you say Newfoundland.
Okay, but anyway, Newfoundland.
I went there with a colleague in the Taoiseach's department, Wally Kerwin, who had been there earlier when John Bruton discovered it, as it were. We were in St. John's, the capital, and Wally wanted to find a family called Power who had featured in a Ryark documentary sometime previously. And he knew generally they lived in a place called St. Bride's, which was about 100 miles from St. John's. So we hired a car and we drove off. And very quickly after you get out of St. John's, you're into open country. So we drove and drove and drove, and eventually got near where we thought, and looking for directions. And there was a pier, and there were two fishermen at the pier. So I got out and went over and said to them, we were looking for Powers. And they started talking. They were called Nash, the Nash brothers, and they looked and sounded more or less like a Nash family that had lived a mile from where I grew up in Garrus. And they said, you go down the road now and you go past Whelan's. So my name was Phelan before I married. And so we went down past Whelan's and we came to Power's house. And when we got into Power's house, there was some, I think maybe on a Sunday, there was a group there and a group of people. It was the correct family. And we were talking. And on the table was the local newsletter of the area. And the subject, the editor of it was called Agnes Walsh. I mean, every name that came up was incredibly
resonant.
And the first article on the front of the paper was about the Tremor Theatre Group. But you could not make it up, could you? I had goose pimples. I still do all those years later. So we went out and we met people and they brought us to the graveyards and showed us around. And honestly, every tombstone had the name of somebody that I was at school with. There were Morrisseys and Keown's and Aylwards, which name is not so common in Ireland anymore. At that stage, when I first went to Newfoundland, there were two Aylwards in the government of Newfoundland, two ministers called Aylward. It's really, it was very interesting. And the accents were very, very close and in some parts of Newfoundland, because the settlements had been, the Irish had settled in certain communities and the English had settled in others. So they kept their accents, Southwest England or Southeast Ireland. And the Southeast Ireland people mainly left from the port of Waterford. And they mainly came from within a day's walk of Waterford. So you could get a 30-mile radius from Kilkenny round Wexford up to Youghal maybe. And that was the migrations. And so I set about, anyway, developing connections. And one of the things that that I did in the end and was really happy about was created, with the help of the government over there, a memorial to the Irish and to the connection between Waterford particularly and Newfoundland. And in St. John's there's a huge building called The Rooms, and it's their big museum and art gallery and public building, and there's now a display there for the for the Irish Newfoundland connection, and shows the 100 most prevalent names, Irish names in Newfoundland, and it's mapped showing where they came from in Ireland and where they settled in Newfoundland. And that's there for posterity.
In 2009, Agnes retired from her career in public service and she moved back to Tremor with her husband, Sean. It was while based back there that she began to investigate the possibility of establishing gardens in memory of Lefcadio Hearn.
While I had been working in Dublin, our then ambassador to Japan, late Sean Ronan now, and we were talking about how to get more Japanese visitors to Ireland. And he said, if only there was some way of commemorating Lefcadio Hearn. And he started telling me about how important he was in Japan. And I had not known anything of this. And we talked about it, but we didn't, there was no reference to Tremor or a Tremor connection. That happened somewhere in the 1990s. After I retired and I was here in Tremor, I was talking to the then mayor of Tremor, Joe Conway, and he told me that there was a group of visitors coming, and he mentioned they were connected to Lefcadio Hearn, and I got quite excited. I did a bit of research on Hearn's links with Tremor, and I found out Andy Taylor had recorded where the tombstone of Hearn's guardian was in Tremor Church, and found out various connections. So when they came, I brought them around the town and gave them a little tour of the places that Hearn was connected to or would have seen as a boy and where he swam and all that. And the grounds of Tremor House down the road, not far from where we are, and we went there. And then while we were there, I just got the idea, this place needs a revamp, and it did. And this would be a great place to commemorate Hearn. And I started researching it. And then I found that Hearn had written about Japanese gardens and had published about them and had a great interest in nature. And it all began to sort of fit together.
It's a tiny little seed of an idea, really. It's a tenuous link, yeah. But it's blossomed now, and it's become, you know, it attracts a huge number of Japanese and international visitors.
Yeah. You see, he left Ireland when he was 19. He'd been claimed as an English writer, as an American writer, and as a Japanese, you know, mega famous figure. But his Irishness had been forgotten until Sean Ronan reclaimed it, and his Tremorne-ness wasn't really in it at all.
And Agnes, do you think genuinely that Tremor did leave a mark on him? You know, all those summers he spent with his great aunt?
I do think it. And I think the sea in Tremor left a huge mark on him. One of the earlier biographers of him, a woman called Nina Kennard, she wrote about his days in Tremor being the happiest days of his childhood and the impression. Now, she was obviously fantasizing, I expect, to a great extent, but she was saying the ocean, the power of the ocean, would have left such a mark on a mind as sensitive as Lafcadio Hearn's. But certainly he learned to swim here. He became an amazingly strong swimmer, something he did all his life. He wrote about the sea. He had many stories about shipwrecks in different parts of the world. And he was a great sea writer. He's in the American Anthology of Sea Writers. And I think that can definitely be credited to Tremor.
As a final question, I asked Agnes if she is a spiritual person and what her thoughts are on the afterlife.
I think the gardens do represent spirituality. We hear that a lot from our visitors. They say they find peace and they find it a lovely place to meditate. I don't know myself about a belief in an afterlife. I hope there is an afterlife for the spirit and the soul, which would be an Eastern way of looking at it or a Buddhist way of looking at it, that if the body leaves this world as it will and does, that the spirit that is you lives on in some way.
Thanks very much, Agnes, for talking to me.
Not at all, Catherine. Thank you. It was a great pleasure.
This was made with funding from Commissioner Man and the television license fee.